This is Community Voices on NPR Illinois 91.9 UIS. John Kelker continues moderating the Community Health Roundtable, Basic Community Needs in the COVID-19 Pandemic.
Let me switch now to David, and I want to thank you for joining us, David. You're fairly new to Sangamon Community Resources, having taken the spot for Charmin Doering, so welcome to our community. In your first few minutes, can you, separate from COVID-19, can you tell us about the services that your agency provides? Talk about the number of people and the families you serve, how families access or work with you relative to housing support and other services that you have. And as Pam did, switch then and let us know in the last 6 months since COVID hit, how has that impacted you and what are some of the greatest challenges your agency?
Yeah, I want to start off by saying thanks for having us, John. Definitely been a challenging time. Aside from COVID, what Sangamon County does is we are the designated community action agency for this, the county of Sangamon County here in Illinois. Our biggest focus is providing LIHEAP, weatherization, and CSBG assistance. The LIHEAP, of course, is our energy assistance program. We provide help with folks, lower income folks that have utility bills that maybe have either gotten out of control or behind for whatever reason through our LIHEAP grants. We also offer weatherization services to lower income folks in Sangamon County. What that entails is, you know, going into their home and finding a way to make their homes more efficient. So that way, we'll kind of maybe help solve some of the problems of energy assistance and the need for that. We can go in and, provide insulation, possibly maybe replace some windows, holes in the attics, things as such, light bulbs to help with energy efficiencies. In some cases, we've been able to provide new refrigerators. That's been actually a big item in a lot of people's homes. An older refrigerator, may not think much about it, but an older inefficient refrigerator can actually consume quite a bit of energy throughout a month. So we are able to do a few things with that through our three weatherization grants that we get. And then we also have services for rental assistance, mortgage assistance, some food program that we have through Humphrey's Market, where we provide a food box to elderly seniors that need help each and every month. And then we also provide scholarships and a few other programs through our CSBG grant. One of the things that we've always taken pride in as well in our organization is that we also provide services and training and education opportunities for some folks through our CSBG program. We don't want to just, pass out a benefit and, have them move on and come back next year. We want to try to also give them some skills, give them some information and knowledge to help them, possibly help themselves out of that hole a little bit. And then if we're able to provide some services and some help through our services to be able to get them out of that hole and then keep them going forward. So we do quite a bit of stuff through our organization, through our grants, and much more than just providing them a benefit and then, kind of seeing them next year. We do try to have them have some skin in the game as well, and then offering them other avenues with employment support and stuff to be able to become self-sufficient and, really try to solve the problem in itself. Since COVID, as far as how many families, we provide energy assistance to thousands of families throughout the year. Of course, all those are based on income and the number of folks in the household. Our LIHEAP program is for any folk, anybody that's at 200% of the poverty level. Our CSBG program is also at 200% poverty level for income. And if we find folks that are in within those income guidelines, we do everything we can to provide all of our services to them that they need, energy assistance, weatherization if they do need that, rental assistance and then things as such, as well as we also have a sewer rebate program that can help folks get caught up on their sewer bill and their water bill if they fall behind in that. One thing we have found is usually if you get behind in one bill, a lot of other bills get behind as well. There's definitely a reason for that. So we do do try to provide, you know, full service there to more than just maybe help one little problem. We really want to try to solve the bigger problem with that individual, with that family, to help them get back on their feet and be self-sufficient going forward. As far as qualifying for our support, again, it's all based on income. We verify that, you know, as they come in, they'll fill out an application. You know, everything that we do through our grants, which are all administered to our organization through the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity, everything is based on their income levels. You know, from our housing to our energy assistance to our sewer rebate program to our weatherization. So it's real good on what we know, things that we do out here. We keep very busy with the demand, especially since the COVID hit. And to kind of move into that, you know, as far as the changes over the last 6 months that have affected our organization, you know, before COVID, we would actually set up face-to-face intake. Individuals would call in. We would have times we would get the word out. You know, for example, our LIHEAP program would usually start the beginning of September. We would open it up to elderly individuals as well as folks with either handicapped individuals or children in the home. And then October 1, we would open it up to really anybody to come through. They would set up an appointment. They would come in. They would know everything they needed to bring with them. And then we would do a face-to-face intake with that individual. It usually takes about 20 minutes to a half an hour. And then based on that and what information they brought, you know, we'd be able to determine what services and amounts we were able to give to that individual. Since the COVID, face-to-face intake has ceased on the direction of DECIO. So we really had to come up with a way to, you know, work with individuals without meeting them face-to-face and having them coming into the office. And in all reality, the changes that we've made have actually been somewhat of a surprise for us. We started working, you know, more over the internet, over email, over our websites, Facebook, through, you know, word of mouth and things as such. And we have a Dropbox out front. People can come into the front of our office and pick up an application. They can print an application off the internet. They can print an application off our Facebook page. They can, you know, drop that off. And we have actually been very successful in being able to continue providing services without folks, in many cases, even stepping foot actually inside of our office and, you know, going through the intake process in person. Whether that's going to come back or not, you know, once the COVID starts to subside, we'll see. But as far as from our organization, we have found actually a lot of success in working with that. One of our big fears was older individuals that may not have access to some of the technology that, you know, to stay in contact. But in all reality, we really have not come across many people that haven't been able to either call or you know, sign on to the webpage and print off an application. And a lot of that, we have to give credit to a lot of the families that are out there and that have really pulled together to help folks, you know, older folks and their families. But there still is a big demand out there, you know, for folks that don't have a lot of family support and stuff. And we've actually been surprised at how well it's been working out with us, because that was one big concern we had, was that we may be missing out on a little bit of a part of the our client base that you know, needs to come in here, but then they can't. So, but in all reality, it's worked out well. We haven't seen a big number of folks that we're not reaching, and we've actually been very surprised how well embracing a lot of the technology that's been out there for a while has helped our organization. So, in a way, from our viewpoint, you know, we'll probably get incorporate a lot of these changes into our everyday processes going forward as well. So, you know, that's a positive thing for us as well. Increased demand, I would say our demand has been, I would say, well increased by about 200 to 250%, both in our utility assistance as well as our rental assistance and our food program assistance. And we have been able to adapt to those changes. We have received some extra funding through DECIO in the form of a LIHEAP CARES grant as well as a CSBG CARES grant. So that has allowed us to hire a few extra staff members to handle the amount of inquiries that have been coming in. But even with that, right now, we are running roughly about 7 business days out for when somebody will drop off an application and we can get it processed and let them know exactly what we can provide for them. We are hoping here over the next couple weeks to bring on a couple additional staff members with funds through these grants to help get that, that number from 7 days down to about, maybe 2 or 3 days. But demands has definitely been probably as high as I've ever seen it since I've been here, and really talking with some of the other folks that have been here for a while, that's really at the highest level really we've ever seen it. And so those are, kind of a lot of challenges we have faced with our clients and then kind of what we have done to overcome those. We work with the folks that, need the help, want to get the help and get back on track. And we do find that through a lot of the services that we do with a lot of our case management, our financial literacy classes and things, that, people want to get up and on their own 2 feet, and be self-sufficient. And then, a lot of people aren't just looking for a handout, but they'll be back next year. They want to, be self-sufficient and want the skills to help do that. With this, it's affecting all people. One thing we have noticed that a lot of the folks that are coming through the door lately are folks that have not really been in that situation before. So that has been definitely a challenge working with a lot of the folks and getting some folks to even come forward for the help. But we have come across a lot of people through word of mouth that just simply were almost kind of too proud to ask for help type, because they never had to have help before, but maybe they lost their job and, times have really changed over the last couple months. So, it's not any one particular type of individual or family. This COVID has affected all Americans, all Sangamon County residents, and we're doing everything we can here, Sangamon County, to provide the services we can to everyone. Go forward. It's been a big challenge, and it'll continue to be a challenge for probably quite some time.
I'm sure we'll come back with questions when we check the chat. Dr. Wolfen, I want to thank you for joining us. As background, talk to us about pre-COVID mental health you and your colleagues at SIU Department of Psychiatry were providing, and what were the most common mental health problems you and your colleagues were seeing? And then since COVID-19 and during the past 6 months, how has your practice changed and the problems you're seeing changed? And are there specific COVID-related mental health problems? I know that 211 is seeing an uptick in mental health issues, and I'd be curious if you've had to have a switch in how you've provided services and the impact on that for you.
Great. Thank you so much for inviting me to participate today. We actually work in a lot of geographic areas. So we have a presence in both Springfield hospitals as well as both hospitals in Decatur. We have several outpatient practices in Springfield, including at the Mental Health Center. We have a large practice at Centrum. We work inside of some other clinics, internal medicine, women's health, pediatrics. And we take care of the entire age span, so children through geriatrics. And prior to COVID, on the outpatient side, for adults, we saw mostly anxiety and depression. That might be somebody who has a first-time anxiety or first-time depression, or it may be somebody who's been struggling with depression that doesn't respond to treatments and needs really very complex, specialized care. In the child and adolescent population, it's a lot of ADHD, behavior problems, a lot of autism, and then depression and anxiety as well. On the inpatient side, we tend to see people who are sicker, so they may have schizophrenia or bipolar disorder, as well as people who have a severe depression and need a higher level of care. And in the emergency room, we've always seen a broad array of people, people who are in some distress and don't know where to turn, some people who have a lot of psychosocial stressors like homelessness that are causing some psychiatric symptoms, and then people with severe mental illness as well. With COVID, we saw a dramatic increase in psychological distress. And we know that the CDC is estimating that about 40% of the population is experiencing symptoms of anxiety or depression at this point in time. Now, that's symptoms of anxiety or depression. That doesn't mean they meet a diagnosis of having anxiety or depression. But we're seeing that as well. There's a lot of stress and anxiety. that people experience that often will cause insomnia, which then worsens their anxiety. And we found that as the as COVID has become more politicized, that's actually driven up the anxiety in the population because there are people who are genuinely afraid of the illness and people who are being kind of harassed by friends and family members or people on social media for their fear of the illness, and that's actually making their symptoms much worse. We also know that there's been a dramatic increase in substance use. So we're estimating about 30% nationally, and that seems to be holding true locally. And that's kind of three categories of people. One are the people who were already using substances. They tend to be using more substances right now because they haven't been at work, they haven't been going out, and so they're sitting at home and using more substances. We have also found that people who used to use substances and have been in recovery are now using substances again. Now, that's not everybody, but there's a large percentage of people who have relapsed. And then there's new people who haven't overused substances in the past, but now are using a lot of alcohol or drugs to really manage the stress that they're experiencing. And so we're seeing these impacts right now, but what the entire mental health field is expecting is that the impact of COVID is really going to dramatically increase in the years to come. We're expecting there to be a lot more substance use that we're going to need to intervene and treat. We're expecting a rise in anxiety and depression. And we're also expecting a rise in PTSD. Because this has caused a lot of trauma. It's exacerbated a lot of trauma, plus all the racial trauma that we have right now. All of this is happening simultaneously. So we're expecting a rise in trauma-related disorders. Another group that we're actually seeing an increase in symptoms are healthcare workers and first responders. Now, fortunately, we haven't been hit the way some other major cities have been hit, so we're not seeing it to quite the degree here that my colleagues in New York or some of the other cities that have just been overrun with COVID, where they've had a number of physicians or emergency room nurses committing suicide because of the stress. But this is something that we're gearing up for because we are seeing a lot of distress in our colleagues who will reach out to us for some assistance. One of the positives that has come out of COVID is when we first went on lockdown, we almost immediately transitioned to telemedicine to reach our patients. And telemedicine, we're able to do that because both the state level restrictions and the federal level restrictions on telemedicine were relaxed. So we could all of a sudden provide telemedicine into somebody's home. And we found that people who would have difficulty coming to appointments because of transportation or work or whatever, were showing up for their appointments and getting the care that they needed. And they universally liked it. And many actually asked if after COVID, could they continue to use telemedicine. But SIU has tracked our telemedicine. And we have found that since COVID, we have provided telemedicine to someone in every county outside of Chicago. In the state of Illinois. So we've been able to reach a lot of people who otherwise wouldn't be getting care. So that has been a tremendous aspect.
Central Illinois providing services to every county outside of Chicago. Thank you, medical professionals. This is Community Voices on NPR Illinois, 91.9 UIS. In our last segment, we'll hear answers to various public questions after this.